Tune in at Wednesdays at 2 p.m. for the program. I, your host Nate, will go over a variety of different genres and themes. I sometimes call my friends and do dumb stuff, and if you guys like dumb stuff, you're gonna love my show. So yeah, Wednesdays, 2, be then.
What's going on? What are you doing? Tanya Dungaskigo, then on Zewa Dahusa Dutch, Ungahuan, and Hadiwa Nodus, and the Aboriginal Voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne Joto FM, CFRC.
That's right, it is 6 o'clock right here at CFRC 101.9 FM, and we broadcast from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Ani Nichkiwank, Doug Farquhar, Edition Nikos, Minwa Sean Story. Es na minwa, nishnabi noewin. And it is another Tuesday night for us. Sean, having fun yet?
Always having fun, Doug.
It's been so hot over the last few days. Although it has brought an end to some, and I say some, of those deer flies. I don't think they like the really hot heat. We were over 32 degrees the other day. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. But what has come along are fireflies. Did you see fireflies over the weekend at all?
Yeah, I've seen them since June.
Mm-hmm. Well, we must have a convention in my front yard.
Possibly.
Right around the juniper trees.
Yeah, but I've been hearing a lot online about this may be the last year you'll see fireflies or something like that.
Why is that?
Or lightning bugs or something. I don't know. I have never clicked on the story. It's not really a story. It's things that are people are sharing. And I should have probably took a look, but
that's okay.
You know, it's generally just the environment, it's all going away. That
well,
kind of thing.
There is impact on the environment, so, you know, mm-hmm. we'll have to talk about it. You know, I've been hearing a lot recently about water and water, you know, protection and the water walkers, and there are a number of Great Lakes watchers. And so it's interesting that those folks are just now starting to make their voices heard to go along with First Nations voices that have been saying, hang on a second, drinking water is important in our communities, or, you know, just looking after the environment, wetlands and streams and creeks and rivers and lakes. So, I don't know, have you been hearing much at all?
What water walkers are you speaking of?
There's the women who are involved from Wequimacong. And that they have been doing for many, many years. They were here in town years ago. We stopped, the Aboriginal Voices team stopped by to say hi to them and got a few bits of information from them. Autumn Pelche, that was when I first met her, and she was just a young person. She was, I think, in grade 9 at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And now look at her. She's an ambassador at the UN for water. And water safety. Yeah.
No, they always seem to walk at least once a year, once every few years. I'm not sure what it is. But I haven't seen them recently.
No, okay. But there are projects going on that to keep an awareness about the Great Lakes waters. And now I'm seeing there are some smaller groups recently a group in my neighborhood came by to talk to me about this little stream that goes by across our property. And they wanted
what
to know if I
know?
Well, they
Can
wanted
we fill
to know
it
if
in?
I if I no they didn't want that but they wanted to know they're doing a survey of all the people who have that water passing over our land, whether or not we actually dump anything into it, or we use it for watering our plants or our, you know, our trees, that sort of thing. And I jokingly said, you know, I thought about that a number of years ago, Actually, it was January 1998, and they kind of looked at me. What are you talking about? And I said, January 1998. Remember that ice storm that we had? And we had no power at all? I went down to the creek and pulled out two buckets of water. And I was walking back towards my house very carefully on this icy surface and up a little hill. And a helicopter flew over. And I paused and I looked up, and it's a military helicopter, and I thought, what is this? That night on the news, they said that the Prime Minister of Canada, Jean Chrétien, had flown over the area, our area, and they showed some of the pictures from it. I could see my house. I couldn't see me. But Mary said that's my heritage moment, getting two buckets of water to use to flush toilets. But the people did what you just did. They laughed. They thought that was funny. But they're worried about people using the little stream to take as much water out, especially this time of the year, you know, with the dryness of the land and not having very much in the way of rain. Some people have been taking buckets and buckets out.
Buckets
of water, to water their trees in their little area. And I paused and I thought about it, and I said, well, you're doing a survey, right? And they said, yeah. I said, well, those people taking the buckets out, they're going to pour it. Now, the trees will take in the water if they can, but much of that water is just going to pass through the soil and back into the stream. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
So they didn't have that on their list. They didn't have that on their list. You know, the land and the streams and the water, it all works in conjunction with what's there. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, but it's nice because we've got those people who are going ahead and being proactive when it comes to water in our communities. So, yeah, I was just wondering about that. The other aspect I have, I talked with young people about, you know, grade 5, grade 6 age on up, whether or not they know how to read a map. So that if they see blue on the map, they know what the highest point of land would be and what direction will the water be flowing. And, you know, it's interesting how many people do not know how to do that. But I don't suspect it's because of the computers and the cell phones and that, because you can use the same topographical map on a screen in your hand as it is a map, and you can turn it and look at the land from your perspective where you're standing. So should be able to figure it out, but get people to think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use maps?
In GPS mostly. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. In the past, it's been maps with like the paper ones that you fold up and unfolded. It is definite art to learning how to read a map.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm hoping people continue to do that so that they can use both. Mm-hmm. That would be my goal. Anyway, I'm just wondering how you're doing for time there.
Oh, doing just fine, Doug.
Okay. Because one of the things we have tonight, I have an interview I did with Lindsay Redekop, and we'll have that coming up in a few minutes after the next song. But Lindsay has done some photography with her grade kindergarten grade ones. Over the years, she actually created, she's going to tell us all about doing this, but you and I talk about photos and getting out and taking photos on our hikes or our trails or just, you know, wherever we find interesting things. Well, she actually took that idea and did it with looking for the letters of the alphabet in nature.
Yeah. Cool.
So, and then she's going to tell us how they did it and what they do once they get the pictures. So, you ready for this?
So they're going to tell us that? Or you're going to tell us that?
Lindsay's going to share. I did the interview with Lindsay, and she's really excited about hearing this one. All right. I got some good music for you.
Oh, yeah?
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This
maybe,
one...
Maybe in a few minutes.
Oh. Oh, sorry. Did you have something?
I have nothing.
Oh.
Just a moment. I'm gonna...
Yeah. No, that's all right. Maybe we should just go to music, and we'll let Lindsay come back and chat with us. That all right?
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Ace and Abby, we were here.
What if I can't? Sin lovers, it's sin lovers, oh, it's sin lovers. Why does it feel like a
it's wonderful to see you again, Lindsay. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
That's great. I love it. It's a summer, nice summer day, and you're getting some time to yourself, relaxing, I hope, after a long school year. But we've had a couple of requests from listeners here at Aboriginal Voices at CFRC, and we're going to go to you as our expert. about looking for a way to keep language going in the classroom with young people, but also through a special event. So tell me a little bit about your alphabet that you have pinned on the wall.
Sure. So we have an alphabet wall in our classroom, and we use it for putting words up there. So we call it a word wall. The first words that the children learn when they come into our classroom are their names. So they learn how to spell their names, what letter they start with. So those are the first words that go up on our word wall. And then throughout the year, we'll put more, we call them high frequency words up on the wall. Those are words that appear in books that we're reading. So lots of common words like the, or no, or yes, things like that. Mom, dad. The kids always want to know how to spell happy birthday so they can write a card for someone in their family. Or when it's time, they'll want to learn how to maybe write Merry Christmas at certain times of the year. So what we try to do is build a little bit of independence for them so they can use that word wall to write words. So at the top of our word wall, we put the alphabet. And my favorite way to display that was through nature pictures. So each letter is either found in nature, or sometimes the letters are tricky, so we might have to create them using sticks or leaves or pine cones, rocks, things outdoors. But what we tried to do first was find letters occurring just naturally outdoors. So for example, sometimes when you look at trees, the way that their trunks are shaped or the branches, sometimes you can see a letter within that. So we did try to go through the alphabet starting with A, but as you're walking along or exploring, you might find the letter U or the letter F. So you try to keep track and just try to make sure you hit each of the 26 letters. So then you can create your nature alphabet.
So I bet the easiest one is an O.
Yeah, and usually you can find L pretty easily, some of those straighter letters.
Right, yeah. And are they capitals or small letters that you're doing?
We focused on the capital letters first, mm-hmm. and then we had fun with that. So we decided to make the lowercase letters back in the classroom. We have a basket of little stones, and so I gave each of the kids a letter that I had written on a piece of paper, lowercase, and then they used the stones to cover that letter. So then on our word wall, we have displayed the capital letter and then the lowercase letter beside it.
Okay. And these are all photographs that you've taken outdoors so that they have an experience of going out, but also coming in with either with or without the letter that you need. But they'll be looking for it in the environment each trip?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. And you can apply that learning in other areas as well. So some other things that we did when we were learning about 2D shapes and 3D shapes, we started a shape hunt outside for the different shapes that we had learned about. And so then we were able to take photographs and bring those in to discuss and talk about some of the other shapes that maybe we could make next time. And if there were ones that were tricky, we had sticks available outside in our outdoor area that kids could use to make a diamond or a rhombus or a rectangle.
And they learned those names in kindergarten, grade one?
That's right.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, and they can actually make these shapes, especially a rhombus?
That's right, yeah. They use the sticks to create those shapes.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'm just thinking now that that'll be something I'll be doing outdoors as I pick up sticks after the big rainstorm that went through here. We had a big wind and rain, and we're expecting more, but I have to pick up a few sticks, so maybe I'll pile them in different shapes.
Mm-hmm. And they explored with different sizes as well. So some of them used small sticks. Others found large logs to create, you know, a really big square or rectangle.
Cooperation. You got to work together to get large logs moved, mm-hmm. Eh?
Yeah, and then we had one child using leaves to make a circle.
And who takes the photos then? The children or do the adults?
A combination. So sometimes the adults, if the child wants to be in the photo, and sometimes the child.
Oh, okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that young people are learning to use the technology that we have in our hands now, especially with digital photography.
Yeah,
so right. What other things would you suggest for some of our listeners to do in the summertime with, now I don't mean just the young learners, because you know some people are asking about their children, boys and girls who are, you know, in grade 3 or grade 4 or 5. So any other ideas that come to mind quickly for you?
I was also thinking about when we were talking about patterns, and so the kids were using some of the outdoor items that they found in nature, pine cones, acorns, leaves, sticks, and then they were making patterns with those as well. And we also studied some mandala patterns. So then they were able to create their own circular patterns. And they were concentric rings. And so these were young kids, but they were making, you know, quite detailed and artistic looking mandala patterns.
Ah, very good. It'll be interesting to see what I can have some of our listeners share with us when they go out and try some of these ideas.
Mm-hmm. And I did look for inspiration before we went out. I looked on the internet, and if you just, Google circle patterns with natural materials, and it'll show you how you can use items to create a really pretty pattern.
Okay, that's another use of technology, right?
Mm-hmm. My teaching partner had also been encouraging kids to make art using the things that they found outside in our forest area. So, you know, for example, she might show them a picture of an insect, or some inspiration was from a book called Leaf Man is another one. There's other stories that use natural items to create the pictures in the picture books. And so then that was kind of the inspiration for them to start out making their own scenic pictures. And we had kids using sticks and rocks to make it looked like trees. So again, we were taking those photographs if they wanted to be in the photo, but then they were able to take their own photos because they were proud of their work that mm-hmm. they created.
And then can you print them off at school and then they take them home, or do,
yeah.
you, do you do any stimulus for writing as well with this?
Yes, yeah, sometimes we print out their pictures and then put them in their journal, and then they have something that they can write about and show their families later. A lot of pictures we print out and include in a special memory book, photos of them from the year, so then when they take it home at the end of the year, they can talk to their families about all the things that they learned and completed during the year.
Okay, that's good, because then it's something like a journal or a diary or a calendar in a sense, because over the year they'll be able to look at things, but when they go at the end of the school year, they've got something they can look back to over seasons, if you want, or especially the winter season. There's some really interesting photographs you could get through that too. Especially if you wanted to study how fast water can freeze outdoors and with a spray bottle, right? You've tried that, I know.
Yes, we also tried the frozen bubbles. You can blow bubbles in the winter, and when it's really, really cold, they'll freeze.
And what are they like when you catch them?
Yeah, they'll stay on the kids' hands for a second, and then usually they move and they burst.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder how that works with because normally when in the summertime when you blow bubbles and you can try and catch one, and as soon as it touches your hand, it disperses. Yeah. But in the winter, when you said you freeze them, then I wonder if they're like frozen water that can stay a little longer. I don't know. Be interesting. That'll be my test next winter. Go out with bubbles and see what happens.
Yes.
Well, Lindsay, this has been fascinating, and I hope that you've given people enough to get started, especially if they go out and take photographs of the alphabet in nature. I know a lot of adults would love doing that too.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and it's a good challenge, because the kids get excited about making sure they find each of the letters.
That's good. Okay, last word to you. Something to encourage people to enjoy the outdoors this summer safely.
Well, I would say just get out there, and it's always nice to have a little challenge, whether it's a scavenger hunt or taking photos of something specific. So maybe one day it's letters, another day it might be shapes. Maybe you'll even look for numbers next. So I just encourage people to get outside and have fun.
Lindsay Redekop, thank you for being part of Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC this week.
Okay, thank you for having me.
We'll see you later. Take care.
Respect the gift. Respect the gift. Respect the gift. gotta give it all you got.
A Day to Listen.
Anin bojo, shaj kobenese que desnikas, megazido dem, bachuanan donjaba, ojibwe nishnabe and dao. My name is Shoshona Kish, and I am one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023. I'm honored to be speaking to our next guest who plays such a pivotal role in our child welfare system for our children, Dr. Cindy Blackstock. She is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and a professor at McGill University School of Social Work. She's been doing this work and advocating for Indigenous children's rights for over 30 years. Cindy, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really delighted to be joining you, Shoshona, from unceded Algonquin territory here in Ottawa.
Wonderful. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and how you'd like to be known to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Cindy Blackstock. I am from the Gitxsan, which is in northern British Columbia. And I grew up all over northern BC, often in remote and rural communities. And some of my best friends were in the bush through the animals and everything else. So that whole knowledge set is really informed the way that I now look at the world, and I try to do my advocacy for First Nations kids. It's really one that takes into consideration the whole child and where they sit in the family and where they sit in the world, and of course in relationship to the land.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that traditional place of the child in community and relationship to land?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they think that elders are the most important people in our nations, but my experience is different. Elders absolutely are honored and respected as knowledge keepers, but their role is actually to support what I view as the most sacred, is the children. The children are the closest to the Creator, and they represent the perpetuity of our cultures in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities. And that's why the elders play such an important role in passing that knowledge along to them. So they are really, really key to not only ensuring our languages survived, our laws survived, our relations survived, but in looking after the land as well.
Mm-hmm. They really are our future.
I've always said to people, you know, the reason I focus on children is because children are the keepers of the possible.
I love that.
And we have an opportunity to raise a generation of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children that never have to recover from their childhoods and who grow up feeling really proud of who they are and able to make respectful friendships with other persons of difference. And a generation of non-Indigenous kids that don't have to say their sorry. And that, to me, would be a great gift we could collectively leave as a legacy.
That is a beautiful possibility. And it is something that we can do. You know, and I know that you're working in this profound way, you know, around policy and legislation, but also in terms of connecting with people, because I think this is our time. We get to decide what comes next. We get to decide how we come together as greater communities and what we want our legacy to be. You know, and I think by now most people, you know, across Turtle Island have heard about residential schools, and many have heard about the 60s scoop where Indigenous children were taken from their families and forced into the child welfare system. But many people don't know about the Millennium scoop. Can you talk about that?
What I think people need to know is that First Nations children and young people receive a lot of their funding for public services from the federal government because of an old piece of colonial legislation called the Indian Act, which was used to force First Nations kids into residential schools and is still with us. It's still on the books. So on reserve and in the Yukons, the federal government funds all public services. And that's why we have things with communities without water, or only 35% of First Nations have broadband access. It's really an apartheid public service system. But this has been allowed to continue forever. And then in the wake of residential schools, when the last one closed in 1996, families were left with the post-traumatic trauma, community trauma, from the residential schools with far fewer resources to deal with it. And yet, because the public didn't know any better, they judged the families as if they got more, not less than every other Canadian. Hmm. Now, when we were working in the late 1990s, we knew about these inequalities and we wanted to make sure that families had a chance to be able to safely raise their kids and recover from this trauma that affected them. And so we worked on solutions. And we found that there were many solutions documenting exactly the same problem, same solutions going back for decades. Canada was routinely choosing not to deal with it. And that meant that we were going to have to turn to the courts to force the government to do it, because there were more children being removed from their homes at that time than at the height of residential schools. And that number has only grown since then because Canada failed to implement the solutions that were already on the books that could have helped kids.
Why do you think that that is? Why do you think that Canada has failed to show up to these critical issues for First Nations children?
I think it's because colonialism is deeply rooted within the Canadian government. But our great hope is that is the Canadian public, because governments don't create change, they respond to change. And in the 6 weeks following the discovery of the children in unmarked graves into Kamloops, Eva Jewell and Ian Mosby have said that more TRC calls to action were done in that following 6 weeks than in the previous 6 years. So when Canadians say, look, there's no space for giving First Nations kids less services than everybody else in this country, and they keep on it, then change is going to happen. We've gotten the courts to agree with us that what Canada is doing is racially discriminatory. And there has been some positive action resulting out of those court decisions for First Nations kids. But we're still dealing with things like lack of water, lack of equitable education. And that's where public engagement is really important.
These kinds of conversations are really important because the media moves in these cycles. And sometimes, you know, these really important things don't find themselves in the headlines. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot as the numbers of children are found at residential school sites. And somebody mentioned that that number is over 11,000 at this point. And, you know, and I think that we need to keep the conversation alive so that that change can happen. As soon as the silence falls across everything again, then we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Dr. Bryce, who back in 1907 found that Canada was underfunding so severely, quote, Indian health services. And there are such bad health practices in the schools that that was leading to children dying at a rate of 50% per year. And that was covered by national newspapers at that time. And then headlines would be like, children are dying like flies, absolute inattention to bare necessities of health. And the government chose not to implement those reforms. And a lot of those children then ended up unnecessarily in those unmarked graves. Other children joined them because of abuse and other types of horrendous harms as well. But I've always felt like when the headlines die, the children do too. So every time, one of the things I'd say to the public, every time when you see a gross injustice and you know there's a solution, for example, Canada's lack of action on murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls in 2S+ community, and you look away, that allows for that harm to continue. We have to keep our attention. And when we do, positive change happens.
Yeah, real things become possible. You mentioned an apartheid system, and I had a chance to visit South Africa recently, and many people don't know that the apartheid system in South Africa was in some significant way based on the reserve system in Canada, that, you know, a team of people came here and studied that system and then brought it back there, you know, and I think that it's really important for people to know the history here and the significance of that, because we get to make history now.
That's right. And we more often can more clearly see human rights abuses in other countries than we can at home. And the reason for that is that they become normalized through kind of government propaganda and other things. The opportunity of learning from the past is to learn the lessons, not just the events, and feel guilty. That's not going to get anybody anywhere. But to learn the events in a way that prepares you and your children and others in your circle to actually cast a different type of Canada, one that lives up to the values it says it espouses, of justice, of freedom, of respect, and all these things. It becomes possible because we're courageous enough to embrace the truth. And without the truth, we aren't able to elevate ourselves or create a society that is deserving of all children in this country. So I think that this is very, very important to do.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, and I think that that people in general relate to that, you know, and I think sometimes the weight of the emotional response to things and feeling a sense of powerlessness in addressing them is really gets in the way for many people. I want to congratulate you on the big news that came recently around your work with Canada's Human Rights Tribunal approving the landmark $23.4 billion settlement for Indigenous children and families harmed by the welfare system. And this is the largest class action settlement in Canadian history. It's very incredible work, Cindy. And I know that there's a federal court that still has to approve it. But if they do, my understanding is that 300,000 people are expected to be compensated. Many of them are children. Yeah. What is the significance of this case for our communities beyond you know, the settlement?
Well, I think one of my messages to Canada is you wouldn't have had to pay any of that had they actually acted on the solutions before we filed the case, because there would have been no victims and therefore no one would have been harmed and by its discrimination. Mm. And then it wouldn't have had to be paid. But the fact that they were hurt, and in fact, the deaths of some children were linked to Canada's discrimination, I think it was really important that it be a significant penalty against the Canadian government, because they did this harm on the heels of the residential schools and the 60s group, and they repeated it again. They're a repeat offender for our kids. So there needed to be some measure of justice for each of these victims. And that's an acknowledgement that what they went through was wrong. It was illegal behavior on behalf of the government of Canada, and that they matter as an individual. We also need to have the supports in place so that they can, you know, use this money in ways that uplift their lives. So going on to school, or maybe going on the trip of their dreams somewhere, reconnecting with family, all these things that, you know, young people want to do, I think is really, really important. But the major public policy message is that Canada has to choose to do better when it knows better, because otherwise we're all going to pay the price for it. And most importantly, some children are going to pay for their childhoods. And it's not that that's totally unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. Do you see an impact, a potential impact from this settlement on the Indigenous child welfare system moving forward for kids currently in care?
Yeah, well, one of the big pieces of this is that when we talk to folks who were victimized by Canada's discrimination, their number one goal is to make sure other kids don't go through it. So in addition to this $23.4 billion of compensation, we're working to stop the discrimination and make sure it doesn't happen again. And in that way, we've had something called Jordan's Principle, which we're really honored to work with Jordan River Anderson's family on, and he's a little boy it's named after, which ensures that First Nations children and youth get the services they need when they need them. There's been over 2 million services provided to kids under Jordan's Principle since the tribunal ruled in 2016. And we've also, since 2018, we were successful with a non-compliance order in getting services out there in child welfare. So more prevention services. In fact, the first significant investment of keeping First Nations children together with their families since Confederation. There's been all kinds of money government has spent to split for children away from their families. This is the first chance to keep them together. And that's in the billions and billions of dollars. But I want to make sure that the discrimination stops, that there are no other victims from Canada's discrimination, and that we actually set in play a relationship going forward where First Nations kids are viewed as being worth the money because they are sacred, like we started our conversation out. Yes. And that way they can grow up healthy and proud.
What can individuals do to create, like, to support that vision for the future and, like, directly impact how things move?
Write to your members of parliament and your members of the legislature. Support Jordan's principles. Say, look, the day is over for continuing to give First Nations kids less. Let's give them the childhood they deserve. Make sure yes. that when someone comes knocking on your door at election time, I always print out a copy of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action on the murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls calls to justice. And I ask them, I say, what have you personally done to implement these and make a difference? Mm-hmm. While your party, I want to know what you've personally done. And if they don't know that, I tell them that they're going to have to come back once they have an answer. Like, these are the things that actually make a difference. Make sure you wear that orange shirt, not just on Orange Shirt Day or when you hear headlines about these children in unmarked graves, but that you do that as many days of the year and wear it into the voting booth. That is really, really important. We actually even have a calendar families can order. And every month there's something that you can do free of charge with your family or with your community or with your school to implement the TRC's calls to action. I think another thing we were able to achieve with compensation that I'm happy about is that the estates of children and families who died before the compensation was awarded, but who had experienced the discrimination, they will be compensated. And those children in the unmarked graves under the Indian Residential School Assessment, they got nothing. And I think that that's something that needs to be made right. I think that the government of Canada needs to compensate the estates of these young children. And so that's something else to bring to the attention of your member of parliament or your member of the legislature. Most important, there's absolutely things you can do. It's not going to cost you any money. It's not going to take a lot of time, but you can make a world of difference.
Amazing. Cindy, this will air on September 30th. And, you know, the theme for us this year is around Mino Bamatsuin, which in Anishinaabe Mawin means that good road or that good life. And we're talking about that in the context of Indigenous identity and Indigenous excellence. What are you reading? What are you listening to? Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, September 30th is also my birthday. So my birthday wish for everybody is that you get onto the website and you do those things to support First Nations kids. In terms of inspiration, one is we're going to be honored to be hosting her 91st birthday, a party next week, and that's the incredible Elenisa Bamsawin. Folks, go on to the National Film Board. You can watch her over 50 documentaries on all kinds of topics on First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples free of charge in French and in English and often in First Nations languages. Do check her out. For me, of course, Jordan River Anderson and the legacy he left as Jordan's principal and the incredible Shannon Kustachin, who created Shannon's Dream, a teenager from Attawapiskat First Nation who led the largest child rights movement in the country to get what she called safe and comfy schools and equitable education for First Nations kids. And I would also say the non-Indigenous kids who stood with First Nations kids by coming to the tribunal hearings and by writing letters to the government saying, you know, this isn't about charity. This is about justice. And this is about making sure I can grow up in a Canada where First Nations kids don't get left behind again. You know, those are the people of inspiration to me. And I am forever grateful that they're out there. And I hope that they continue to kind of multiply in number.
Cindy, it's been such a pleasure learning from you and talking to you about your incredible work, Chi Miigwech, for all that you are doing for our communities and our kids.
Thank you, Shoshana.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation action at daytolisten.ca.
Well, you know that you had me. From that first drink, when the wine made my cheeks flush a crimson pink, you know I gave in to the sparkle in your eyes, with that whiskey kiss and your come hither smile. So when I was persuaded we had something more rare and more extraordinary than simple exclusivity, the dreams I've seen lately. one more time. You can spend all your time making money, or you can spend all your life making time. But if it all fell to pieces tomorrow, would you still be mine? And when you're looking for your freedom, nobody seems to care. You can't.
What do you listen to make your Monday mornings that much better? Absolutely Frivolous on CFRC 101.9 FM. We play all kinds of comedy, stand-up, sketch, songs, even poetry, and the occasional interview. Mondays at 10:30 a.m. Tune in or listen to Absolutely Frivolous on our archives page on cfrc.ca.
St. Monday watches over you and me and grants the bone exhausted some liberty.
Attention, woman in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit SCWIST.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
Every day, you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The Charts on CFRC.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Okay, so at 7 o'clock.